Welcome to UBS On Air from our temporary offsite studios. I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. We are joined today by Chief Economist for UBS Global Wealth Management, Paul Donovan. Paul recently authored his latest Chief Economist comment, Can Debt Be Inflated Away?, which talks about the implications of government borrowing to inflation. Paul, welcome back, and thank you for joining us on the podcast today to highlight your recent comment.
Thanks for having me back again, Dan.
So, Paul, it would be helpful for our listeners if perhaps you can begin by providing us with a crash course on what inflation is and how it is at times leveraged by governments in order to inflate their debt levels.
So inflation is a general increase in price levels. So the first thing to note is that it's got to be across the board increase in prices. If you've just got one price rising and other prices not doing very much, then that's not really inflation in the economic sense. But also, inflation's a whole host of different prices. Potentially, you have the price of labor, so wage inflation. You have the prices in the economy for consumers, consumer price inflation, but you also have producer price inflation, which is the prices faced by companies. For equity investors, producer price inflation tends to be the important thing because most companies don't sell to consumers. They sell to other companies. And so the prices between companies are what we look at. So lots and lots of different measures. But the key point is that whatever price level you're looking at, it's a general increase in prices. Now, one of the things that we hear a lot about is that governments might try and inflate away debt, and they have done this on occasion in the past, albeit in the very distant past, where if you create inflation in the economy, the idea is that that will increase the nominal level of GDP. The nominal level, of course, includes inflation. And if you have a fixed amount of debt and your nominal GDP is going up because of inflation, then your debt-to-GDP ratio miraculously comes down.
Paul, that was very helpful to provide some foundation for our conversation. So in this case, what kind of inflation are we talking about? What kind of inflation matters in the case of government borrowing?
So very good point here is that when you are saving money, you're interested generally in consumer price inflation. Because if you're saving money, you're saying, I'm not going to buy a new car now, I'm going to buy a new car in the future. So your main concern is what happens to the price of the car between now and when you come to spend your savings. But if you're borrowing, that doesn't really apply. Because if you're borrowing, sort of by definition, you're spending the money now. So you're not really interested in what happens to the price after you've spent your money. So when you are looking at any kind of borrowing, the inflation rate that is important is income inflation, because your income is basically telling you how easy it is for you to meet your monthly or quarterly or annual debt payments, and how easy it is to pay back your debt over time. So when we're looking at government spending and government debt levels, what we are interested in is the government's income growth, income inflation. Now, because governments are deriving their income, in most cases at least, from taxation, and because governments tax the economy as a whole, what we tend to do as a simplification is look at the GDP deflator. That's the inflation rate for the economy as a whole. So if the economy as a whole is experiencing an increase in inflation, the chances are the government's tax revenues will be going up at the same rate. And the government's tax revenues are, of course, their income, and it's the income inflation that determines how easy or difficult it is to repay debt. So we're looking here normally at the GDP deflator as the key inflation measure, but basically it's about how much or how easy it is for the government to raise income.
So, Paul, with that said, what are the kinds of problems that present themselves that come as a result from this borrowing activity from governments?
So what we've got with governments, it's not like having a mortgage. So one of the key differences between government borrowing and most private sector borrowing is that governments don't pay back debt. And this is one of the things I've been hearing an awful lot as we've been going through this COVID-19 crisis. People saying, well, how on earth do we pay for this? How on earth do we pay back the debt? And the answer is, why on earth do you think they're going to pay back the debt? You know, governments don't pay back debt. National debt exists and just sort of carries on. The level goes up and down a bit, but the, you know, the absolute fact is we don't repay debt. So the issue for governments is that they are always rolling over debt. They're refinancing. When a bond matures, they don't say, oh, right, I've got the cash here, off you go, that's it. When a bond matures, they go out and they borrow more money to pay the debt back. And so that creates a very interesting issue in terms of financial markets, because what it does is it gives financial markets influence over the debt level sort of all of the time, because the government is always coming round and saying, you know, we need to refinance our debt again. Bond investors have a quite considerable degree of power at that point. And they can say, well, this is the price that we're going to be repaying, rolling over your debt at, refinancing your debt. So that's one of the critical issues there.
Paul, can you provide us with some insight into what government debt to GDP ratios typically look like during periods of high inflation?
Absolutely. So the idea is that, as I said earlier, you've got inflation pushing up GDP, your debt level is not moving up in the same way, so your debt-GDP ratio goes down. So you've inflated away the debt. But the problem is the fact that governments need to keep refinancing the debt. This makes it actually very difficult to reduce the debt-to-GDP ratio over time. One of the key problems here is nowadays most government debt is accrued through inflation-linked spending. When we look at government spending, it tends to go up with inflation. And in the United States, this goes back to President Nixon. So Nixon was fed up with Congress forever squabbling about how much to raise the Social Security budget or raise various forms of spending year after year. And so what happened in the early 70s was that huge parts of the U.S. budget deficit were inflation-linked by the Nixon administration. And so that means, for example, the entire Social Security budget will rise in line with consumer price inflation. So what that does, of course, is mean that your deficit doesn't disappear in the event of a higher inflation episode. And then you've got other forms of spending which are not formally linked to inflation, but which are actually effectively tied to inflation. So if a government's doing an infrastructure project, if it's building, you know, a road or an airport or even a wall, what does that mean? Well, you all know what happens when you get a quote from a builder. They'll come round and they say, well, the price of materials has gone up, so we're going to have to add an extra 10% to the cost. Well, it's exactly the same with governments. They are consumers in the economy like everybody else, and if prices are going up, the prices governments pay also goes up. So when we're looking at the budget deficit, and particularly in the United States, the budget deficit goes up in line with inflation in the normal course of events. So governments can't sort of say, well, you know, we'll use inflation to shrink the borrowing this year. It doesn't work out like that. They still end up having to pay more if inflation rises.
Paul, what does history tell us about the behaviors and or reactions of fixed income investors, bond investors, when they are hit with high inflation?
So this is really the crunch point. This is the critical issue. Because the government, as I was explaining, needs to keep refinancing, you know, every quarter it's got to roll over some of its debt. The views of bond investors, when they're confronted with inflation are absolutely critical to the problems government have in trying to inflate away their debt. So generally speaking, normally, investors will say, right, we want a real yield, and then we want compensation for inflation. So we think inflation's going to be 2.5%, and we would like a real yield of 1.5%, so 4% yield on the bond. Thank you very much, for example. But what happens if you get an inflation shock? Well, if you were assuming inflation was going to be 2.5% and all of a sudden it's come in at 6 or 7%, you're not going to be happy because you've just lost money in real terms. Remember, the bondholders are savers. They really, really care about the fact that prices are going up because, you know, you've been saving money to buy a car and all of a sudden you are less able to buy a car because inflation has eroded the real value of your savings. So if you get an inflation surprise where you get high inflation, and for most economists, high inflation is over 5%. So if you get an over 5% inflation rate, investors are suddenly going to start saying, now hold on, we no longer trust economists' inflation forecasts. Terrible thing to happen. And therefore, we want insurance. We want an inflation uncertainty risk premium. So now we want 1.5% real yield, 6% inflation, but we don't trust the government with inflation anymore. So we want another 1.5% on top of that in case the government deceives us and we get higher than expected inflation. And so what that's doing is raising the cost of borrowing very quickly by about 1 to 1.5% for the government. And as the government keeps rolling over its debt, it keeps having to pay more and more to borrow because the bond market is punishing the government for inflation surprises. And that punishment hurts the government debt level as fast as inflation can help the government debt level. So what we find when we run, you know, any kind of model is that if you have a period of high inflation, the government's debt to GDP ratio, it may drop for a year or for 2 years. It depends on the maturity profile of the debt. But after 3 or 4 years, the debt GDP ratio will be going up because the bond market will be charging the government more to borrow money because they're saying, we don't trust you with inflation and we need that extra insurance. This is exactly what happened in the 1970s. When we had the high inflation episode of the 1970s, government debt levels didn't go down. They went up. And so it's an example of how the ability of bond markets to punish governments when they try and roll over debt can prevent inflation from reducing the debt to GDP ratio.
Perhaps as a final point, can you spend a few moments walking our listeners through the concept of financial repression and its impact on reducing debt levels?
So this is where I think we are going to be seeing some action. As I hopefully made clear with the last comments, you know, what the government really needs to have is low interest rates, not high interest rates, if it wants to reduce debt. And if it's created an inflation problem, it's going to end up with higher real interest rates than it would otherwise need. But financial repression is a very special form of taxation which shows up through lowering real interest rates artificially, as it were. So what is financial repression? I mean, there's several definitions, but the one that matters here is when the government applies pressure to the private sector to force them to buy bonds. So how does that happen? Well, if you think about it, it already happens. So banks are required to hold reserves. Those reserves can either be cash at the central bank, which doesn't give you any interest, or it can be through holding government bonds. So effectively, regulation of the financial system forces the banking sector to hold government bonds whether they want to or not. You know, the banks aren't holding the bonds because they think they offer an attractive return or they're a good investment. They're holding the bonds because they have to. And the same thing can be applied to life insurers, to pension funds. And of course, we've got evidence of an element of this in the United States today, where President Trump's administration is applying pressure to the federal thrift in order to say, don't buy these assets. It's a very, very small step from don't buy these assets to do buy these treasury bonds. And we've seen this time and again in history, that you, through regulation, through prudential risk management rules, whatever it is, you force institutional investors to buy fixed income assets produced by the government. What that does, of course, is artificially lower the yield that governments have to pay. It pushes down the yield. And by doing that, the government reduces its funding costs and can reduce its debt over time. It's what the UK did after the Second World War. In 1946, the UK had a debt-to-GDP ratio of 243%. By 1974, that had dropped to 42%. That phenomenal decline in debt to GDP was primarily the result of financial repression, which kept the UK government borrowing costs extremely low. But of course, what you're really doing here is creating a tax on private sector savers, because the private sector saver is receiving a lower yield than they would wish to receive. They are giving up some of the investment return that they would normally get, and they're giving up that investment return to the benefit of the government. Well, if you're giving cash to the government, it's a tax, however you dress it up. And that's what we'll be seeing with financial repression. From the government's point of view, it's a simply fantastic tax to have, because of course the underlying investors tend to blame the banks and life insurers and pension funds for giving them a low rate of return. They tend not to blame the government for regulating this financial repression tax into existence. So I think we're going to see governments doing this more and more as they look to stabilize or possibly to reduce debt to GDP ratios. Inflation isn't the answer. It's costly, and it doesn't really help over time. But a financial repression tax, which basically forces certain investors to buy bonds, it is still something which has economic costs. It's not a cost-free option, but it's probably the most palatable option to governments over the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, Paul Donovan, very insightful and topical conversation on inflation today, given the kind of borrowing activity we're witnessing from governments all over the world. So I do appreciate your time and for joining our listeners, and we will look forward to catching up again with you soon.
Thanks very much indeed, Dan.
And I do want to point out to our listeners, and especially our clients of UBS, please reference ubs.com/Paul Donovan for a copy of Paul's recently published blogs, articles, and commentaries. And that, of course, includes Paul's most recent chief economist comment, "Can debt be inflated away?" From UBS On Air's temporary offsite studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.